webmaster of www.gerweck.net. As always, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. This is episode 62 of the Gerwerk Report podcast, the podcast that continues to tell it like it is. And as always, I'm joined along with my tag team partner, Frank D. Let's say what's up.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Real awesome to be back here on the GRP. And we got a hell of a show for you today.
Yeah, we got a lot of interesting topics to discuss. We're going to get into what's going on with the WWE Network, what's going on with Raw, Survivor Series, etc. We're also going to talk about some of the questions that have been sent our way, either through emails or on our Facebook page, which you can, of course, follow on Facebook at Gerwerk Report Podcast. Definitely recommend you do that. But up front here, Frank, this week, probably the biggest story, one of the bigger stories, was that Mr. McMahon, of course, returns to WWE television. I guess his big reveal, I guess we've already known this, but he officially announces it, that Survivor Series in the month of November is free to new subscribers of WWE Network. The one-time signature show, one of the big three or four pay-per-views they would promote a year, is now available on the network for free this month if you're a new subscriber to the network, WWE Network. Frank D., your reaction to this, and I think it just really speaks to the fact that, you know, in 2014, at one time, the Survivor Series, which, as I said, was one of the bigger pay-per-views of the year, is now available for free.
It's pretty sad, man, when you think about that. I mean, I grew up, you know, a WWF fan, you know, when I was a kid, and I remember, you know, the saxophone music hitting up there when the Survivor Series would come, and, you know, see, it used to be billed as a Thanksgiving tradition. And I'm talking about the Survivor Series way before what happened in Montreal. I'm talking about when it was, like, you know, one of the big three, you know, or one of the big four, including King of the Ring. So to see that it's offered for free, you know, it's sad, but at the same time, it's expected. I mean, the WWE product right now isn't hot, as we've said many times here on the GRP. It's not hot at all. And Vince McMahon, for the last 2 years, has looked at Survivor Series as a throwaway show in the first place. So, I mean, is anybody really surprised here?
Yeah, remember, Vince was actually talking about dropping the concept altogether, doing a different theme for November.
Right.
We really shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, we wouldn't. Yeah, I'm not surprised about this at all. I mean, you have a subscriber count that is where it's at, and they're, you know, they're pulling all the stops now. They've dropped the $9.99 6 month commitment. It's down to $9.99 now, and a lot of people out there were complaining because, hey, we're subscribers to the network, but yet the new people come along and they get Survivor Series for free. Well, newsflash, people, when you order Netflix, Netflix usually gives you a month for free, and then after that month is over, they start charge you for the next month. No different than what WWE is on. So I don't understand what the big problem is with that situation. I don't see it. I don't understand it at all. And I just think that people are just nitpicking too much a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the heyday of Survivor Series, the Thanksgiving Day tradition, Thanksgiving night tradition, when you'd have, back in the day when the WWF had a deep roster, and you'd have one big feud settled in a Survivor Series match. We have 5-on-5, and if you're pinned, you go to the back, and it could be 5-on-4, 5-on-3, etc. You'd have the Team Warrior against Team Rude. And, you know, now in 2014, Frank, they just don't have the depth probably to do a match like that. Obviously, the roster's very depleted. They're not creating the stars they one time would turn out. And just in 2014, the Survivor Series really, I think, essentially means nothing anymore.
Yeah, it does. You know, and I got to say a special shout-out to Wayne May on the Facebook group. See, he's been posting a lot of the old Survivor Series costume video posters from back in the day lately on the Facebook page. And it brings back a lot of memories, man. Like you said, it brings back memories on when the Survivor Series was a big deal and when it was that heyday and when it was, you know, really good talent out there working these matches, and it felt special at the time. The Survivor Series doesn't feel special, you know. I don't know when the last time I felt excited about a pay-per-view.
Actually, I was watching the Monday Night War series, and it was the one with The Rock. In fact, I think it was a new one this week, the Rock's return, or the creation of The Rock. Of course, he debuted in 1996 as a Survivor Series as Rocky Maivia, and, of course, that was still when the Survivor Series still had some luster to it. And I was just thinking back, you know, Frank, what a way to debut a new character, a third-generation wrestler. There was a lot of momentum for The Rock at that time. They were building him up. He had just trained with, you know, Dr. Tom Pritchard. He was a guy they needed. They're making a new star. You know, WWF had lost a lot of their stars to WCW. And here, we're going to put The Rock on a signature show, the Survivor Series, debut him there, Madison Square Garden. And it was just one of those very memorable moments in the history of WWF, in the history of the Survivor Series. And, you know, in recent years, we've not really seen much in the way of the traditional elimination matches. And I'm just thinking, you know, today, they really couldn't make a debut like The Rock at Survivor Series because, you know, I think essentially, Frank, the pay-per-views, as you said, you've not been excited for the pay-per-views. Today, just in general, the pay-per-views mean virtually nothing anymore.
Yeah, they don't. That's the reason why they're going for $9.99 or free, because they don't, right. they don't mean anything. You know, I mean, I remember back in the day, like I was sitting here on the GRP one time, about how I ran my cable bill up to like $300, you know, back in the day, like 96, 97, just ordering the pay-per-views back-to-back. And you bring up Survivor Series 96 there, and it was the debut of Rocky Maivia, who would go on to be the great one in The Rock. That was also the night where Bret the Hitman Hart had a wrestling clinic with Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, that was pretty good stuff there. And it was also when, you know, Shawn Michaels and Psycho Sid had the match for the WWF championship, in which I believe Sid hit Jose Lothario with a camera. So,
oh, wow, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
that was good stuff. It was Undertaker coming from the ceiling. It was that was when Survivor Series had its luster and had its magic. No different than WrestleMania. No different than SummerSlam. But hey, we're in 2014. We're about to be in 2015 very shortly. And I have no faith whatsoever in WWE. And I know that they have Sting and all these guys out in NXT waiting to, you know, bring them up to the roster or whatever. I don't think that Kevin Steen, Adrian Neville, Kenta, or Devitt can save WWE.
not in this environment, not 2014. In fact, I'm watching the recap of Raw on Hulu, and I'm treated to a 5-star clinic with Mark Henry versus The Big Show. I guess that's like a big main event on the show.
Well, 5-star clinic, or is it something that's going to put you in the clinic?
Yeah, I didn't see many fans pop for that match. I mean, here is, what, two aging veteran stars, former world champions, and both are overweight. Nobody's into this match. You know, I was telling Frank, you know, I'm watching the show. It seems like the show is in slow motion. There's just no excitement, and segment after segment with Triple H and Stephanie out there. And, of course, this week we saw the return of Vince McMahon, or Mr. McMahon, looking a lot older than we can remember from the Monday Night Wars. It just has no – I mean, Raw, to me, just has no flavor. There's just nothing going on right now at all.
Yeah, that's how it's been for, you know, the last year.
A long time.
I ain't going to say the last year. I'm going to say the last years. It's been like that. They have creativity just at all time low.
Yep. And another topic here, Frank, is we want to talk a little bit about cage matches, because we just had Hell in the Cell and there was no blood. We got Elimination Chamber coming up here in February, unless they reschedule it. And actually, I ran a poll on my website. Is it time to eliminate the Elimination Chamber? Because to me, Frank, what's the point of really doing these steel cage matches if nobody bleeds?
Right.
And we're seeing it over and over now. We're in this PG era. We don't see blood, or it's faded out so you can't see the blood. And really, what is the point of doing a steel cage match in any form, whether it be Elimination Chamber, Hell in the Cell, or whatever, if nobody bleeds?
Right. It you know, a cage match is supposed to be a match that it's built up over time. It's supposed to be a really hot feud. And I think, like I said, the other day when they had the Rollins-Ambrose main event at Hell in a Cell, that had been built up so much, and that feud with the Shield had been built up to as far as they can go. And usually matches end in the cage. I've said it on here before that they did the best they could do in a PG environment that consisted of pretty much no blood. You need blood to make that match work. You need color. It's not believable. You know, I understand the WWE's policy on no headshots with the chairs and all that stuff. I get that. But as far as blood goes, what's wrong with a little blood? I mean, WWE is so conscious now with their whole image that they don't want to have any blood or anything like that on their TV. I keep saying all the time, this demographic they're going after, this 13, 15-year-old demographic that they want to get, is playing violent video games. Okay? They're watching mixed martial arts. They're watching violent movies. What makes WWE so different? Vince McMahon said in 1999, they make movies. So what's the problem there? WWE Studios makes movies that have blood. So what's the issue?
You know, I can see it maybe on a television situation, you don't want the blood, but it's pay-per-view. You know, don't the rules change a little bit on pay-per-view? It could be a little more risque. I mean, this requires somebody, an adult, hopefully in the house, to plunk down the money for the show. So why can't we have some blood on a pay-per-view?
I mean, it's ridiculous to me. It goes back to kind of the same policy, Steve, that Turner had in 1995 when they had no blood on their TV show. I can remember watching the other day WCW Uncensored 1995. When it was a match between Dustin Rhodes and the Blacktop Bully, and it was on the truck, and I remember they both ended up bleeding in the match, and they got fired shortly after that by Eric Bischoff for the blood usage, and I'm kind of thinking to myself, you know, in 2014, blood is what you need to make these feuds go over. It you don't have to bleed all the time. I don't like to see blood all the time. But it needs to be done in order to really make the angle work and get the situation over. I mean, look at this past Monday night on Raw when Rollins curb stopped Orton into the table. Yeah, Orton had blood. He had color. That made it even more intense than what was actually going on. So sometimes you need blood to make these angles work. I think WWE has lost sight of that.
It's also kind of frustrating, too. I mean, I'm watching the network because, you know, we've talked a lot about the WWE Network. I was allowed to go back as a new subscriber. Now, I guess since my initial six-month commitment expired, I was considered a new subscriber, so I could use the same email address and get right back on the network. Didn't have to reset a password or anything like that. And I'm watching the Monday Night War series. That's the only thing I've watched since I've got the network back on, because I wanted to catch up on the series. And every time you watch an episode, Frank, it'll say PG-14. And it's like today you can't say ASS, but if you watch the Monday Night War series, you can see that. I mean, you go back and you watch the Monday Night War series, Frank, and it just really speaks to the fact where, you know, I'm watching as we're recording this, I'm watching Rollins versus Randy Orton. Got nothing against these guys, but there's like no excitement in this match. There was no excitement for Henry versus Big Show this week on Raw. And I'm watching the Monday Night War series. It's PG-14. We say a few funny words here, and we do the crotch chopping, and we have a little color here as we relive the Monday Night War series. And then, you know, it's 2014, Frank, and it's PG. We can't have blood at the pay-per-view. We can't have blood on television. It's just so watered down today. The product today is so boring and generic. Lack of creativity, as you said before. The storylines are generic. The characters are generic. And as you also were saying there with developmental, I mean, they're talking about bringing up Ascension. You've got, Kevin Steen down there. I guess he's going to have a name similar to Owen Hart in respect to him, which is cool. Kenta, etc. But I just don't see, with the developmental system they have in WWE, anything really changing. It always goes back to the same generic characters on WWE. We don't have, I don't need cartoon characters again, but I need edgy characters. I need edgy storylines. What they're giving us right now, and, you know, SmackDown's going to be moving to Thursday nights, and we've got Raw every week. There's just nothing there to captivate the wrestling public. And, you know, you go back and watch the Monday Night Wars, and it's 5.6 ratings, 5.9 ratings, 6.2, 6.9, up to a 7. And today, Frank, you know, if they get a 2.7, I guess against Monday Night Football, that's a pretty good rating.
Right. It's a very good rating, man. Especially when your business is sagging, your business is no longer hot. That's the thing about it. The business is not hot, and I don't see any improvement going on. I don't see anybody getting over. It's just done, man.
Yeah, I don't know if they can make it more stale than it is right now.
Well, I'll tell you
There's nothing going on.
Keep starting to show off with Trips and Stephanie coming out there with the Authority. Keep doing that. Keep burying Kane to the point where I don't even want to see the guy on the TV anymore. Keep doing all the things you're doing. And keep having as Dean Ambrose said, the Cruiserweight division come out there and Noble and Mercury.
We'll
see what happens. I mean, my God, man. Oof. That's kind of the reason why they stopped doing those brutal matches like that. I mean, Joey Mercury's face, you know, tells the story.
Yeah. A Stooges 2014.
I'll take Briscoe. I'll take Briscoe and Patterson any day.
Well, I want to talk a little about the Monday Night War series. I did get caught up. I'm currently watching the Mick Foley episode right now, but I watched the Jericho. I watched the Bret Hart. I watched Goldberg. I watched the Rock, the Cruiserweights, the ECW influence. And so I'm pretty much caught up on the series. And there's a couple notes I jotted down. I was watching these series, and a lot of things come to mind when I go back and watch these shows. Now, as far as the Bret Hart one, you know, we relived the Bret Hart saga. All the scenarios about Survivor Series, Survivor Series 1997. Vince Russo was on there, our buddy, talking that Vinny, Matt came up with all these scenarios for Bret's exit. Bret didn't like any of these scenarios, so they had to drop a bunch of more scenarios, and Bret didn't like any of those scenarios. You know, when he finally did leave, he was super hot. He was, you know, the talk of the wrestling world was Bret Hart. Really, the only people that cashed in on that momentum, of course, was WWF, who lost Bret Hart. You had the saga of the Mr. McMahon creation, which I'm sure will probably be an episode of the Monday Night War series. But there was Eric Bischoff on there talking that Bret lost his fire. Bret lost his passion when he got to WCW. And to me, Frank, they just totally dropped the ball with Bret Hart. He was the hottest star in wrestling. You know, when he comes in, he's a referee, then he feuds for the U.S. Championship. And it just seems like they never really gave Bret an opportunity to shine in this company. And for Eric Bischoff to say that Bret lost his fire, lost his passion, well, here's a guy who really cares about his legacy, and he comes in, and it's like they have nothing for him. All the backstage politics, the guy has no role in the company, and it's a shame because, you know, at that time, he could have been a major player for WCW, and you talk about a lack of creativity. There was a lack of creativity in WCW.
Let's call it Hulk Hogan. Okay, that's what it was. It was Hulk Hogan not wanting to give Bret Hart his just due. If that had been me booking Bret Hart to come into WCW, I would have had Bret Hart on my TV show. Bret Hart would have addressed the situation to the WCW fan base, got himself over, immediately went after Hulk Hogan. And you could have easily started that build to the next Starrcade with Bret Hart vs. Hulk Hogan at Starrcade 98. Instead of the crap that they gave us with Nash and Goldberg. Just my opinion. Yeah, of course, WWE, you know, took a bad situation and turned it into a positive. Of course, that's what they do at the time. And out of that came Mr. McMahon and Steve Austin and everything that came after that. That's what they did. Well, WCW had Bret Hart debut on Nitro and said that he is going to be a special referee for the Larry Zbyszko versus Eric Bischoff match at Starrcade 97. That's a great way to bring in the guy who was pretty much the hottest commodity at the time after Montreal Screwjob. That's a great thing to do, WCW. Now, if Bret Hart lost his passion, as Eric Bischoff was stating, and I'm an Eric Bischoff fan, you know that. But
right.
If Bischoff is stating that Bret Hart lost his passion and lost his fire when he came in there, I would assume that Bret Hart would be more pissed off than anything coming into WCW. He wants to make a statement that maybe you made a mistake, McMahon, by letting me go. Maybe you made a mistake by not keeping me around. Now, I will say this after watching that documentary. The WWE was moving into a different area at the time, a different zone. They were going to the more TV-14 type programming, the more shock TV programming is what they were going. And Bret Hart didn't fit that. He didn't fit it. So it was a good thing for Bret to leave. But at the same time, don't say that Bret Hart didn't have any type of emotion. He was a beat man. I think Bret came in with, you know, the positives of, okay, let's see what WCW is going to do with me now. Let's configure me versus Hogan. Because, you know, they teased that the first several weeks he was there. See, they teased him versus Hogan. And it never happened. I mean, Bret Hart even talked about how Hogan ran from him the first time. You know, ran the WCW the first time when they were supposed to wrestle. And it all goes back to Hogan. You know, if you look at Bret Hart's run in WCW, let's look how many times did Bret Hart turn heel in WCW. And that was at a point in time, I will say, I saw Bret's character development in WCW, and I had to question sometimes whether Bret was actually a heel or if Bret was just pissed off.
He says, Eric Bischoff says he lost his passion, he lost his fire. And as we pointed out here, he came in as a referee for essentially a meaningless match at Starrcade, feuded for the U.S. Championship, and then there was, of course, the time, unfortunately, where Owen Hart passed away. And he took a little time off for that, as he should. And then, I mean, what do they have for him? NWO 2000, which had been so watered down and retread on. And then they put him in a feud with Goldberg, and he says on the documentary, he was saying to Goldberg, you know, whatever you do, don't hurt me. Just don't hurt me. What does he do? He hurts Bret Hart. So I don't – how can Eric Bischoff get on there and say that I think Bret lost his passion? Bret wanted to stay in WWF, so he took the money. He got kicked out. He's ready to start a new era in his career. The guy is very protective of his legacy. And the guy really generally cares about the business. I mean, I've talked about Bret Hart saying, you know, I loved wrestling when wrestling didn't taste very good. The taste of wrestling wasn't very good. And the guy just wanted to be a contributor to the company, wanted to be a star in the company, was rightfully deserved to be a star in the company. Heck, they're paying him $3 million a year. And to me, I just think WCW totally dropped the ball. And as I watch back the Monday Night War series, and there were so many, you know, glaring mistakes by WCW, but, you know, why don't Eric Bischoff just say, hey, you know, we dropped the ball with Bret. You know, I had all these ideas for Bret, and they didn't come to fruition. But to come on here and say, well, I think Bret lost his passion, to me, that's a cop-out by Eric Bischoff.
Yeah, it's a cop-out. It looks like a lot of, you know, Bischoff cop-outs are going to happen as they retell the story of what happened to WCW. But like I said, you know, I'm a Bischoff fan, but I'll admit Eric was wrong. They just didn't have any. They had no ideas for Bret.
Well, they may have had ideas, but of course, when you let all these guys come in from the WWF and they have creative control and they're making a lot of money and they don't want to work with Bret, and we know Hogan's never wanted to work with Bret. He was in a bad. I think Bret knew the day one when he got to WCW, his career was ruined.
Yeah.
Because he would say he had a personal relationship with Vince McMahon. I go into WCW, and who's the boss around here? Eric Bischoff? Well, he's letting the inmates run the jail. So, you know, who do I talk to? Vince Russo?
Right.
You know, who has control of this company? That's my biggest criticism of Eric Bischoff, is just his management style, because you don't hear that about WWF. You know, WWF gives you a downside guarantee, and if you can get over and you can really click with fans, you're going to make more money than your downside guarantee. But in WCW, oh, I just pay you a flat fee, and what incentive do you have to work hard? You just get this money, period.
Right.
You know, you don't have to. You don't have to work all these dates. You just get the money and you go home and you're happy.
Exactly. You guarantee money. I'm going to get paid either way. It doesn't matter if I go out there and perform or not, or if I go out there and perform and I don't lock the house and I seemingly, you know, as Booker T would say, walk through the matches. It doesn't matter. I'm still getting paid.
All right. A couple of thoughts on the ECW one, the influence, of course, because we, you brought this up with Vinnie Rue when we had him on the podcast, the influence of ECW. And I guess he did say on this podcast that ECW was an influence. Well, that's good, Vince Russo, because they just did a whole episode, Frank, on the influence of ECW. And it was things I kind of forgot about. So much talent being taken from ECW that went up on Nitro. Some of the talent that eventually ended up on Raw, some of the concepts, the hardcore style. You know, the one thing that came to mind when he was talking, you know, they interviewed Paul Heyman for the documentary. He was talking about WCW. And WCW had an open checkbook. And this is something I kicked around with Frank D. the other day. I mean, here's Eric Bischoff, he's taken Rey Mysterio, he's taken Psychosis, Dean Malenko, Y2J, Eddie Guerrero, etc. Really, when you look back at WCW, you know, who were the stars they created? And a lot of the guys you watch on the Monday Night War series are guys that came from other feds. You know, to me, Frank, it's one of the major criticisms of WCW was, you know, once they pushed somebody they got from a different fed, who were the guys they were home growing to be the new stars? When Vince lost his stars, he made new stars. When ECW lost his stars, they made new stars. And in WCW, where was the star creation in that promotion?
A guy named Goldberg, a guy named Diamond Dallas Page. You know, whether people want to admit it or not, Chris Jericho became a star in WCW. But anybody wants to...
And yet they dropped the ball with Jericho.
Well, they may have done that. But Jericho wouldn't have never got the impact that he made on Monday Night Raw had it not been for what he had done in WCW.
True.
So Stone Cold Steve Austin, same thing. Before Stone Cold Steve Austin was drinking beers and copying the Sandman, he was in WCW as Stunning Steve.
And ECW.
And in ECW, correct.
Yeah, right.
Same thing with Mick Foley. Mick Foley was Cactus Jack in WCW before he got to WWE as Mankind. And before that, he was in ECW. But how did they get heat on themselves? How did they get this attention to themselves? Because they would knock Eric Bischoff and knock WCW on ECW TV. But in reality, WCW springboarded them to the WWE.
Well, in a way, you could say Diamond Dallas Page came from AWA.
I could say that, but he didn't make it. Nobody cared about Diamond Dallas Page until DDP actually started doing those matches with Eddie Guerrero in 96. And then he started feuding with Macho Man Randy Savage in 97. That's what made Diamond Dallas Page the people's champ, was that feud he had with Savage.
And I guess in some ways you could argue Chris Jericho was, he came from what? He came from Calgary. He went to Japan. He went to ECW. I think he said he had about 22 matches in ECW, got over. Then he was taken by WCW. I guess when we talk about character development, you know, they did have the power plant, and obviously Bill Goldberg is the crowning jewel of who came through the power plant to become the new stars. And I really think to like 2000, when they had the new blood and they tried to get Sean O'Hare over and Mark Jindrak over and average Mike Sanders, or above average Mike Sanders, etc. It's just over the years, you know, WWE could create new stars, ECW could create new stars, and yet WCW was always very reliant on previous talent from other companies.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major criticisms of WCW, looking back.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, it pisses me off every time I listen to a documentary that the WWE puts out with their revisionist history about wrestlers that WCW supposedly stole. I don't see stealing someone. I don't see it that way. I see it as talent acquisition. If a talent wants to go and work for Turner because they can make more money working for Turner and wrestle less days, how is that stealing that talent? Especially if that talent's contract is up. It's not like they're putting a gun to somebody's head and say, you have to work for me. It's not like WCW put a gun to the head of Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and said, hey, you got to work for us. They didn't do that. They went to Vince and asked Vince to match the offer. Vince didn't want to do it. He said he couldn't do it. So they went down to WCW. Same thing with Hogan. Hogan was done with WWE when he went down to Turner. Macho Man's contract was up when Macho went over to Turner. So I don't get that. I mean, WCW did nothing different than what WWE did back in the 80s when Vince went through all the territories getting all the talent.
That's true.
Okay, it's nothing different. It's the same thing can be said when I watched the Bret Hart documentary, this whole BS thing about, well, we were worried about the belt, and we didn't want Bret to show up on Nitro with our belt. Okay, didn't Ric Flair come to the WWF in 1991 with the NWA WCW championship on Vince's show?
I believe he did.
So that's a contradiction, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Right, but nobody brings that up. You know, nobody, they never bring up that they had to digitize the belt and all that stupid stuff they were doing. Nobody ever brings up any of these things. But WWE wants to come on here on a documentary and they want to act like there's some welfare case or something, when in reality they're not. They did a lot. They did a lot of the dirty business before Eric Bischoff ever came along into power at WCW. Vince was a mastermind at destroying businesses, putting people out of business, and stealing people's talents.
And thus the reason we're in today's world is all the territories are gone.
Exactly. He
largely because of Vince McMahon.
Yeah, he destroyed that territory system. And that's why we're in
AWA's gone, Continental Wrestling, Calgary,
yep.
Florida, Georgia, all those were swallowed up, mainly by Vince because he took all the talent from those groups. World Class,
yep.
A lot of talent ended up in WWF at that time.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's history revision. It works for them, but when it's on the opposite way, as you said, you know, when Vince would swallow up the talent, when he'd get Mr. Perfect from AWA, that was fine. When he got Scott Hall from AWA, that was fine, right? That's free agency. That's the market, right?
Right.
But when the other way around, when Ted Turner had the open checkbook, oh, that's not fair.
Yeah, he's
they're stealing all our guys.
Yeah, they stole my talent. But it's no different than what you did back in the day.
Exactly.
It's like with Paul Heyman. People will say, oh, well, they stole Eddie Guerrero and they stole Chris Benoit and they stole Dean Malenko and they stole, you know, Mysterio. No. What they did was they paid him. That's what they did. Trust me, if these guys thought that they were getting paid really good money at ECW, don't you think they would have stayed at ECW? Why was it the public enemy went to WCW so many times? Why was it a Shane Douglas kept going back and forth between the WCW and ECW? Why was that?
Well, on the opposite side of that, Frank, they brought up that I don't think you saw this one. This was the ECW influence. Was WCW was taking ECW talent just to take ECW talent? I mean, they signed Mikey Whipwreck when he was injured, and basically just sent him home. And they really didn't do anything with the guy. They took the Sandman, and they tried to change his character. I mean, why take the Sandman if the Sandman can't be the Sandman?
Was the Sandman gimmick owned by ECW?
That I don't know, but they were pointing out that, you know, if you're going to bring in the Sandman, then let him be, you know, let him drink beer and have a kendo stick and smoke cigarettes.
Well, here's the thing with that. If Paul Heyman trademarked Sandman and trademarked, we know how this is because we had our good friend Honky Tuck Man on here the other day talking about trademarks. If he trademarked the likeness of the Honky Tuck, the likeness of the Sandman, and trademarked the cigarette smoking and the beer swilling and all that stuff, I don't think that he could have done it in WCW. I mean, let's be honest about something. WCW was already having a legal battle about what happened in 96 with Hall and Nash coming over and WWF saying, oh, they were like Razor and Diesel. You know, down to the core with the tooth picking off. So I don't think WCW wanted to take that chance on being sued by ECW for the same thing. So they changed Sandman. If I remember correctly, he was turned into Hack. But he still came out with a kendo stick. He just didn't have the beer and he didn't have the cigarettes.
Which was his gimmick.
That was his gimmick.
So why take the guy if you can't use his gimmick?
That's something that Paul Heyman would have to answer. And I'm looking if he had a trademark or not.
You know, why would you hire the Sandman if you can't use the Sandman effectively?
All you're
really doing is just taking away from ECW then.
I would probably think that it had a lot to do with WCW just Bischoff trying to hurt him in the business. Bischoff probably figured, or somebody probably stooged him that Heyman was on Big Man's payroll. He wants to put him out.
Now, one thing I got to take exception to with Paul Heyman was he was saying that the NWO was essentially his group. You know, his group is all about anti-establishment. Go against the authority, etc. I don't see ECW as NWO. I mean, that was a concept that Bischoff got from New Japan Pro Wrestling when it was organization versus organization. That bit right there was a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that is a huge, not even a bit. That's a huge stretch, and I'm going to knock that one right now. That no chance in hell, as the song goes. No, absolutely not. First of all, in ECW's heyday, they did not have no stars in that company that were as big as Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, or Hulk Hogan. So that, no, absolutely not. No. Bischoff got that concept from New Japan. Bischoff brought that concept to the United States. Bischoff, you know, had Hall and Nash there, who were two big stars in the WWF, and then we know the story how it goes with Hogan. So no, absolutely not. That's a load of crap. That's just Heyman. I don't know what Heyman smoked that day when he did that interview, but no, that's like you said, that's reaching. Now BWO, yeah, that's something ECW came up with as a ripoff of the NWO, but to say NWO was this group, absolutely not.
Just like WWF did Goldberg as a copy of Goldberg.
Exactly.
So if something that's successful, I mean, they took Goldberg and they wanted to make a mockery of Goldberg that he, you know, only had two moves and he would blow up in the ring, and that's what they got with Goldberg. So it works both ways.
Exactly.
Some of the other talent they, of course, brought up with the ECW documentary was, of course, Taz left when they got the television. And I will say, I was there at the first ECW on TNN taping in Toledo, Ohio, and it was a very good show. It was kind of sad that they finally get on television, and you had the departure as you did. Taz left, and really Taz didn't do much in WWF. I don't know what WWF was really thinking when they brought him in, and maybe it was, looking back, maybe Taz just didn't really have the passion. You know, he said it was like everything came kind of easy for him at a time, and he got maybe a little complacent. But now looking back, I thought Taz, come in with the 13 and the good music they had for him, that he would have been a bigger star in WWF.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I mean, Taz came out there at the 2000 Rumble at the Garden. He had that match with Kurt Angle, and then it just went downhill from after that. I mean, then he starts wearing the pants, and he starts doing the hardcore stuff. That was one of those signings I think Vince just got him to get him.
Yep. Yeah, so it worked both ways. I mean, there was obviously WWF was signing ECW talent. They brought in the Dudleys, of course. They came in. And then, of course, they brought up that their champion at the time, and here's another, protect the belt, was that Mike Awesome was the ECW champion when he signed with WCW. And he didn't show up on TV with the belt, but they did say on television that he was the ECW champion. And they did that really weird scenario where Mike Awesome goes to ECW one final match because he's going to drop the belt. They don't allow him in the locker room because there's fear they're going to just basically kick his butt in the locker room. So they put him in a hotel and they bring him over by car to lose. And who does he lose to? Well, you would think they would lose the title to somebody in ECW to put them over. And who goes out there? But Taz. So it was a one and only time match where you had a contracted WWF wrestler wrestling a contracted WCW wrestler in ECW. That was historic, but then again, this is where, Paul Heyman is trying to protect his belt, too. He doesn't want, Mike Awesome showing up on, WCW with the ECW strap and throwing that in the trash can. But that was quite an interesting period looking back in the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah, it was something that will never happen again.
No.
That's the reason why. We have all these, We these historic moments that happened back then. What historic moments have we seen lately? We haven't seen any. And I'm sorry, John Cena versus The Rock is not historic to me.
Remember when things would happen on pay-per-views? You said you ran up a $300 bill in a month. I mean, you would want to get the pay-per-views because you didn't know what was going to happen, who would show up.
Right.
And, the WWE runs surveys asking you about surprises on the pay-per-views. When was the last surprise you saw on pay-per-view?
Wow.
That's been a long time.
That's a good question. I can't think of any.
No. I mean, you had The Rock debut on a pay-per-view.
No.
But, in recent years, there's been nothing that out of the ordinary that happens on a pay-per-view. And heck, you can't even have blood on a pay-per-view anymore. So. But then I want to talk a little bit about the Goldberg documentary as well. Of course, they brought up the streak. I was trying to remember, looking back at that period, did he go from like 10-0 or 11-0 to 40-0 real quick? Because there was Jimmy Hart saying, I don't know how he got so many wins in between to go from like 15-0 to 40-0.
I don't remember exactly. I just know that Goldberg was on a lot of matches on Nitro, Thunder, and WCW Saturday Night.
Right. With the streak, it went up to, 173-0? And I always think back to talking to Bobby the Brain Heenan when I did an interview with him years ago that, You know, Frank, he was over. He was red hot. They brought up on the documentary that he was as hot as Stone Cold. He was as hot as The Rock. He was hot as Hulk Hogan. I mean, they went back and they relived the moment where he won the title from Hulk Hogan on Nitro from the Georgia Dome. And, you know, Bobby the Brain Heenan's point was always, you know, why end the streak? People are still into it. If he's 173-0, you make him 174-0. If he's 200-0, you make him 201-0. You know, when they actually dropped the streak, when they finally ended the streak, I mean, what a way to do it with a taser. That was the way the streak was going to end. And, of course, that was followed up the week after with the finger poke of Doom. And, I mean, Frank, you talk about Doom and yourself. Those two angles where Goldberg loses a streak and then Nash lays down to Hogan, I mean, that was really putting WCW in the trash can.
Oh, I still go back to my original assessment that WCW truly died or was on its last leg January 4th of 1989 when they had that match. It was just a bad move. You can look at the audience of that show, and I still to this day, I don't see anything positive that came from that at all. I mean, it was a Wolfpack getting back together. It was a taser gun situation. I mean, that was all stupid. That was dumb. And you know, like I said, to this day, you know, Kevin Nash will say, oh, well, I didn't really get anything out of that. You know, and I said before, it all goes back to Hogan.
Also want to bring up, too, Frank, they made a point of this on the documentary that they couldn't really run with Bill Goldberg as a main event guy because he couldn't work a 20 to 25-minute main event. And that's what you typically get on a wrestling pay-per-view is, you know, a 20, 25-minute main event. And, you know, my thought at that time when WCW was so hot with the undercard, the cruiserweights, some of the underneath talent that they had, I don't think they needed to put Bill Goldberg in a 20, 25-minute main event because you had such a good undercard. And I was, you know, really thinking about Mike Tyson. You know, back in the day, we would get together as a group and we'd order the Tyson fight because they were usually 50, 60 bucks. And we would watch the undercard. And the undercard was great. I mean, there were two guys trying to kill each other on the undercard. And then we watched the main event, Mike Tyson, he'd go out there in 2 minutes and he would nail somebody, and that was it. And we didn't sit around saying, man, we got ripped off. That was one round. That was two rounds. Why is it? I mean, Bill Goldberg was a unique character, a unique situation. The guy was super hot, as they were saying, red hot as anybody in the industry. And why say that we can't really run with him because he can't work a main event when, like I said, Mike Tyson didn't work a lot of times 20, 25 minutes, and people were satisfied with their pay-per-views. You know, what's wrong with, you know, Bill Goldberg going out and doing a six-minute main event on a pay-per-view? I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you got to look at it like this, too. I mean, these are coming from, you know, Kevin Nash saying this, you know. And I'm a Nash fan, too, but, I mean, clearly, Kevin Nash, you know. But I just look at it like this, man. You know, Goldberg was limited at WCW. But then when I saw Goldberg coming over to the WWE in 2003 and he worked the match with The Rock, he would work matches with Triple H, it was a completely different beast because they went, what 15, 20 minutes in those matches? 25 tops? So Goldberg could go out there and work a match just like anybody else can work a match. And I still say that they dropped the ball with Goldberg at WCW when they didn't put him in the main event of Starrcade against Hogan. That should have been when Goldberg won that belt. It's kind of like people talk now about the Undertaker's streak ending. Well, same thing could go for Goldberg. It should have been Goldberg, Hogan at Starrcade 98 and Goldberg winning that belt. And that probably, I mean, if they would have done that, I always think, where would WCW have gone after that?
What always speaks to WCW and Eric Bischoff was they were always about the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, you probably gave up a $7 million gate by doing Hogan and Goldberg on a Nitro. I mean, they won the night, obviously, with him winning the championship. But they had Tony Schiavone on there, and he said, that was our WrestleMania. That was the closest thing we ever had to a WrestleMania was that night in the Georgia Dome because the fans were going berserk. And I'd say I'm watching the show on the treadmill. I'm popping because that was quite a moment when Goldberg went in there, jackhammered and speared Hulk Hogan. They put the title on him, and that Georgia Dome just went berserk. And that was kind of sad for Tony Schiavone to say that was the closest thing we ever had to WrestleMania was a Nitro show where Goldberg won the championship.
Yeah. And you know what? I kind of look at that, too. What if they had, like, reversed it around? What if Starrcade that year, instead of being in Washington at the MCI Center at the time, what if they would have booked Starrcade that year at the Georgia Dome? Now, how would that have been? If they were able to put those 46,000 people, however many it was, in the Georgia Dome for Starrcade and see hometown hero Goldberg defeat Hollywood Hogan. And that would have been two things that happened there. It would have been the start of the Goldberg era, and it also would have been the end of the NWO.
And they had Hulk Hogan on there talking that, you know, he makes the call. He calls Eric Bischoff and tells him, you know, he's going to lose to Goldberg on Nitro. So and Bischoff's like, I almost drove off the road. Maybe he should have. I don't know because, I mean, Frank, they brought up, you know, was it a mistake to put that match on Nitro? And Hulk Hogan saying, you know, after I did it, people are saying, yes, some people liked it, and some people were saying, what a major mistake. And he said, you know, that was a spur of the moment. You know, Goldberg was really hot. I went with it. I put him over. You know, in retrospect, was it a mistake? Well, of course it was a mistake. Because, you won the war that night with the ratings. But, again, what WCW a lot of times would forget is it's a business, and that match on a pay-per-view was good for business, and they dropped the ball. They could have made a lot of money off that match, and yeah, they got the ratings win that night. But in the end, they didn't have anything for their pay per views.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think like this, Steve. I remember that match happening with Goldberg and Hogan, and I remember that Goldberg. I think it might have been that Sunday or the week after at Bash at the Beach that year. I think Goldberg defended the title against Curt Hennig. And it wasn't even in the main event.
Because they didn't think he could go 20 minutes.
Right.
So then he has to be on the undercard.
Yeah.
Or the semi-main event or whatever they were doing at that time. So.
Yeah. But they gave us that five-star classic with Hogan and Rodman versus Paige and Malone. So.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I definitely thought that was very telling. Tony Schiavone saying that was the closest thing he had to a WrestleMania was that match. All the pay-per-views they did?
I agree with that, but I also agree that they also had the Sting versus Hogan match from 97 Starrcade as well.
True.
But Hogan botched that one. We all know that. That's why I keep going back to it. Like we were earlier here on the GRP. I keep bringing it up. And, you know, WWE's problems, it all goes back to Hogan.
And Jim Ross was on there interviewed and said that Goldberg should have been their Hogan. They should have kept running with the ball with Goldberg. They had something with Goldberg, and for whatever reason, obviously it was resentment. The guy comes in, he's a football player, he doesn't pay his dues in the business, he gets over super hot, and suddenly, you know, everybody's got to be fed to Goldberg, and people got, you know, very resentful of that. You know, they needed an exit strategy out of the streak somehow. They came up with the stunner, or the stun gun, the taser. You can point to, you know, when did WCW die, but they still had something with Goldberg. He was still hot.
Yeah.
And they totally botched that. And then you got to the point where, you know, the next year, Goldberg, they're chanting Goldberg sucks.
Yeah.
And they didn't care. Once he lost his streak, that was it.
Yeah.
And to lose it in such a asinine fashion was really spoke to the lack of creativity in WCW at that time.
Yeah, I don't want to keep harping on this match you had with Hogan at the Georgia Dome, but the whole setup that night was just stupid. You know, he had to wrestle the match first with Hall, and Hall came back, and Hall looked like absolute crap that night in that match. He did the match with Hogan, and then they did the whole deal January 4th, 99, the Georgia Dome, and the Wolfpack comes back. And remember they had Goldberg in that stupid angle? Where he had, you know, sexually assaulted somebody, Elizabeth or something like that. I guess that's what the deal was. There's a lot of bad storytelling there.
I want to talk a little bit about the Chris Jericho one. I know you haven't seen it yet, but watching the Chris Jericho episode, the Monday Night Jericho episode of the Monday Night War series, it just really, you know, I know you're not a big Jericho fan. I was really a big Jericho fan in the WCW time.
Yeah,
I knew In the WCW era.
Yeah, I was a Jericho fan in the WCW era as far as when he turned a heel. See, this is the thing that I don't like Jericho. I don't like Jericho ever since that story you told me about when Jericho was in your area where you met him at the mall and he was signing Fozzy's CDs. And you told me how much of a prima donna prick he was. So ever since then, I've been kind of like, screw Jericho. But I've seen other situations how Bob Jericho sometimes interacts with his fans. And I don't really care for that. So when a person is like that, I don't really have anything much to do with them. And there's nothing that I find entertaining about them. But I will say Jericho in 98, when Jericho turned heel and Jericho was out there with Ralphus, that was entertaining stuff.
Yeah, you go back and you watch that documentary, and it's like I lived all these moments, but to go back and relive them all, there's a point where he's in the ring and he's telling the fans, don't boo me. I just like, was cracking up. He came up with Greenberg when he was feuding with Goldberg back in the day. There was one where he's cutting a heel promo and he's saying, he says to David Penzer, what city are we in? And it was like the opposite of Mick Foley when they go to a town, he would say, it's great to be here in Buffalo, New York. And then we get the cheap pop from the crowd. And it was like the opposite of him saying, what city are we in?
Right.
That was some good stuff. They had an interesting story how he jumps to WWF, that he's still under WCW contract, yet he's allowed because he's injured. Remember, after he got injured, Eric Bischoff was figuring he wasn't going to re-sign, so he takes him off television, still pays him, of course, because he's under contract, but he is flown to Vince McMahon's house, and he knocks on the door, and they give him an alias to fly. They pick him up from the airport. They drive him to Vince's house. Shane McMahon answers the door. He goes inside, and supposedly they're having a meeting about Raw inside the house there. And they're like, Jericho, what do you think of this idea? What do you think of this idea?
Wow.
And, oh, by the way, hi, I'm here. How you doing, Vince?
Wow.
I mean, what a meeting. What a way to meet the boss at his house when they're talking about Raw. And, oh, by the way, I'm this upcoming young guy that wouldn't mind working for your company.
Yeah, and that just shows you just how the creative process went back then as opposed to today. I guess that meeting would have been Shane McMahon, Vince, probably Vince Russo, Ed Ferrara, maybe Jim Ross.
Probably, yep.
And now you walk into the room and you got 30, 40 writers who don't know diddly squat about wrestling.
And, of course, he came up with Stinko Malenko. Remember when he was shooting with Malenko? He said he had 1,001 hold, and there was a Nitro where he's reading all these holds that he knows.
Right.
And they cut him off, and they come back from the commercial break, and he's still going over the holds.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there was a lack of creativity in WCW, but a lot of things that Jericho did was Jericho came up with. And
that's usually how it goes.
I got to tip my hat, because a lot of things they put on that documentary I totally forgot about. And, yeah, I mean, maybe somewhere down the line Jericho could be a part of the creative staff, because he certainly had a lot of ideas for himself to get himself over at a time when he comes in and the focal point of the show is NWO.
Yeah, but they don't want Jericho to be on the creative staff because, you know, that's the job of the creative team and Trips and all those guys.
Right. And, of course, the culmination of Jericho's, he makes his debut. They try to keep it a secret as best they can. And, of course, they had the Millennium Countdown, and it was always scheduled to happen during the Rock's promo. And he comes out and does the classic, what is your name? And doesn't matter what your name is. And what a way to give the guy a rub, Frank. He's a mid-card guy in WCW, was never going to move up. And here he is on the very first episode of Monday Night Raw. And he's in a promo with one of the hottest stars they have at the time in WWF, The Rock. What a way to get the guy over.
Yeah, I remember that, man. That was a magical night in Chicago when The Rock did that promo in Jericho. I mean, I had never heard a pop like that, except maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin. But here's a guy, like I said earlier on the GRP, that wouldn't have had that impact had he not been on Nitro. Had he not been in WCW, that never would have happened. If Jericho would have been a guy that just came over from ECW, you think he would have got a pop like that? Probably not.
Probably not, no. But it also speaks to the point of WCW had this really charismatic character in WCW, and really they didn't do a lot with the guy. No. I really missed the ball with Jericho.
No, Jericho could have been one of those people. When WCW finally did that new blood angle, Jericho could have been one of those guys a part of that.
And, of course, you know, at the time they had, you know, they lost Saturn, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Benoit. I mean, they had so much good mid-card talent, and the focal point was always NWO. And here we are in 99 after the Goldberg run, and what do? NWO for life, buddy.
Right, NWO Wolfpack. You had NWO Silver and Black. You know, it was just, it was done, man. It was tired. I'm, you know, the NWO was tired when Hogan started coming out there with those damn feather boas. It was a done deal. When Hogan started coming out there with those feather boas and Hogan was looking all of 70, it was done.
True. You know, and I just watched the Rock documentary on the Monday Night Wars, and, you know, they're speaking to the point where you can't put Goldberg in the main event because, you know, you have to traditionally do 20-minute matches. And they had a phase there where the Rock was getting over, and, of course, they turn him heel, the corporate champion. And I'm thinking, I remember that time, that was kind of a risk for them to take because The Rock was getting over as a baby face. And they went, of course, that direction because it obviously set up Steve Austin versus The Rock at WrestleMania 15, which I was there for in Philadelphia. But, I mean, that was a little bit of a gamble. They turned The Rock heel prior to that WrestleMania. And then, obviously, when the guy was going to go babyface, he was going to be a huge babyface.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is that The Rock turning heel, you know, when he did with the corporate team at Survivor Series, it needed to happen that way because The Rock needed to shove it right back at the fans. You know, it had to happen that way. And I like the way it happened because you needed The Rock to wrestle Steve Austin. You know, you needed that build. You needed a guy who could be that heel. And that's The Rock. I still say to this day, Rock really changed the way you looked at heels. Rock was a cool heel. Rock was a heel like I had never seen before. Just over the top with the know your role, shut your mouth, and all that stuff. That was just classic stuff. And I don't know what the hell happened because The Rock that I seen that came out here a few weeks ago in Brooklyn, not The Rock I saw back in 99 and 98.
Well, you know, watching that documentary, too, it really brings up where is the lack of catchphrases anymore?
Right.
I mean, this guy came up with Jabroni and Know Your Role and Poo-Tang Pie. And
Know Your Role, Boulevard, Jabroni Drive.
Over and over he came up with new material all the time. Although the one I always remember that he kind of failed on, he came up with Take a Glass of Shut Up Juice.
Yeah.
That didn't get over. But most everything that he came up with, the catchphrases were money. It really speaks to where's the catchphrases today, Frank? I mean, that really helped get him over. He's calling everybody a jabroni and a Rudy Poo candy ass. And where are the catchphrases today? When I think of generic characters on WWE, where are those catchphrases anymore? You know your role and shut your mouth. There's nothing like that anymore.
Nah, I'm sorry. Bully is just not going to do it. Roman Empire ain't going to do it. Yeah, that's not going to do it.
I don't believe those.
Yeah, I don't believe those either. And I'm definitely not a fan of the Roman Empire either. And we'll get to that shortly.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, was, of course, this month is free WWE Network. And they did a little bit of a special, Frank, where after Raw went off the air, they had a match with Sheamus versus Rusev for the U.S. Championship. This might be something in the future where, you know, when Raw ends, it could be something bonus on WWE Network. Although, Frank, how long was that show? Because you're thinking that the fans there, they see superstars taped up front. They may have a dark match. They do 3 hours of Raw, and then when it goes dark, now there's another match on the WWE Network, and I'm kind of surprised when Rusev gets the championship, they put it on the network and not put it on Raw.
Yeah, and those fans were already, that crowd was already done besides the segments with Randy Orton. So when you had him out there, when Sheamus came out, because here's the deal. This is just asinine to me. Yeah, you have Sheamus and you have Rusev out there earlier during Raw. And you actually have Sheamus work a match, I believe. And then you bring Sheamus back out there after Raw goes up the air for the network and works another match with Rusev. When Sheamus came out there, nobody gave a damn. Because you've already seen the guy. So this is overkill.
Yep. And you were mentioning Roman Reigns. Let's talk a little about Roman Reigns because obviously he's hurt. There's a lot of potential in him. They think he's going to be the next, you know, major star. There's talk about him possibly going on to WrestleMania and maybe facing Brock Lesnar. You know, what is Roman Reigns missing? Why isn't he really getting over with the crowd right now?
Okay, well, you know something that's kind of funny, because my buddy and Wayne May and I were talking about this on Twitter yesterday, and I'll tell you exactly what the problem is with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has this quality about him that's kind of like Kevin Nash to me, but he's not as cool as Kevin Nash. He can't cut promos like Kevin Nash. And on top of that, you know what? There has been no character progression in Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns still comes out to the Shield music, and he still has the Shield look going on there. But if you look at Dean Ambrose, has moved on from that, and so has Seth Rollins. So Roman Reigns is stuck in that whole persona, and that's a big problem. And I have to tell you, you know, people talk about John Cena's five moves of doom is what they call them.
Yeah.
The Superman punch is the stupidest thing I have ever seen in watching this business, as long as I have. It is the dumbest thing. Steve, if I'm going to be out here fighting somebody in the streets, do you think that I'm going to do a damn Superman punch?
Seriously. You are in the cartoonish PG era,
oh,
I guess.
I don't even see cartoons that do that. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. That just looks stupid to me. And they're saying, okay, we're going to put the money on this guy. This guy's going to be the next big thing in the business. I don't see it.
I don't either.
I like
Roman Reigns. I just don't see him as a main guy, player.
Roman Reigns is okay in small doses for me. I'm just not a fan. I'm just not feeling it. If they put this guy in the ring against Brock Lesnar at Mania, Brock Lesnar should destroy this guy. Because you know what? They put themselves, to me, they paint themselves in a corner here, because Brock Lesnar is this unstoppable force. This guy is a former UFC heavyweight champion. He's a legitimate fighter. He can't lose matches against wrestlers in a predetermined situation. It can't happen. That ruins Brock Lesnar's credibility if he does that. So Brock Lesnar has to win every damn match, in my opinion. Because he can't lose. If he lost a fake wrestling match, but he can win a real fight in the UFC, that shows you a lot, and that says a lot.
Totally agree. And I guess we got a question coming up about who we'd like to see Brock Lesnar face at WrestleMania when we get to the questions from the listeners out there. I also want to mention here, Frank, for the month of November on Gerwick.net, we're asking the readers out there. Should Christian be voted into the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame? And I want to point out the Hardys are in the Hall of Fame. The Dudleys are in the Hall of Fame. Edge just recently went into the Hall of Fame. So of that group of, you know, the great TLC matches in the late 90s there, Christian is the only guy that's not in the mix as far as the Hall of Fame. Does Frank D. see Christian as a Hall of Famer?
Christian is a Hall of Famer. We're talking specifically Gerwick.net Hall of Fame or WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, right now we're talking Gerwick.net Hall of Fame.
Okay. Gerwick.net Hall of Fame, absolutely. Christian is to be a Hall of Famer. Absolutely. He's a former multiple-time tag team champion. He is a former World Heavyweight Champion, former TNA World Heavyweight Champion, I believe, or NWA Champion. Yes, Christian deserves to be in the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame, absolutely.
And I will concur with that. I also agree, and I have voted yes for the Hall of Fame. And he's about 74-75%, which usually is a pretty good sign he's going to get in. And, of course, we last month had Lex Luger, is now officially a member of the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame. So congratulations to Lex Luger out there.
Absolutely. And you know, people out there listening right now, in the future, you know, we're going to be, you know, adding Coco Beware. So don't worry. we'll get to that. We'll add Coco and the Brooklyn Brawler. You know, old Barry Horowitz comes to mind as well.
Oh boy. Well, one thing I want to note here, because in the future, Frank, and of course you can suggest a name for the Hall of Fame, hallofame@gerwick.net is the email address. I'm getting a lot of Midnight Express.
Really?
And I have obviously have no issues with Midnight Express going to the Hall of Fame. The question is, how do I address the Midnight Express situation in that Midnight Express really was two groups at one time,
right,
as far as attacking. Actually, Midnight Express was a faction at one time. Then it was a group. Then it was obviously Condry and Eaton, and then it was Eaton and Stan Lane. So as far as the Midnight Express going in the Hall of Fame, and this is probably something I was thought about maybe putting on the Facebook discussion group as well.
Yeah.
How do I do that exactly? Do I put Bobby Eaton solo in the Hall of Fame? Do I put Eaton and Condry in the Hall of Fame? Do I put Eaton and Stan Lane in the Hall of Fame? You know, Frank, how should I address the Midnight Express for the Hall of Fame?
That's a very, very good question.
Yeah.
Because you're right. There were two different factions. There were two different tag teams. I would say that you need to look at the championships involved. Which team was the most successful of the Midnight Express factions? Was it the one, you know, was it the first team or was it the second team? Look at it like that.
I think it was with Lane because I think they were together a little longer.
I would concur with you. I think it would be Stan Lane. But that's also, you know, that's a vote. We can put it, you know, on the website as a vote. You know, let people, you know, put on there, you know, hey, you know, we're thinking about putting the Midnight Express in the Hall of Fame. But which faction or which version, I should say, of the Midnight Express should we go with?
Or should I put all three guys in?
You can put them in as a faction with Jim Cornette, yeah.
Yeah, so Jim Cornette's already in.
Right.
But now, as far as the Midnight Express,
you can put Jim Cornette in with the Midnight Express.
True. So maybe that's something we could, you know, call out to our listeners, our readers of GrowWig.net as well, is exactly how should we address the Midnight Express for the Hall of Fame? Should it be Eaton and Condry? Should it be Eaton and Stan Lane? You let me know. Should it be Bobby Eaton solo?
Yeah.
It's hard to see Bobby Eaton going solo because he's so synonymous with Midnight Express.
Yeah, he's synonymous with when I think of Bobby Eaton, and I just think of Midnight Express, and I think of the Dangerous Alliance. You know, I mean, I know he had a singles run there and all that, but when you think of him, you think of factions, you know? So
Beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Beautiful Bobby Eaton, and I remember the Alabama Jam. If it was me, you know, me doing it, I would just put him in as a faction, put him as a group, the Midnight Express.
Okay, so we'll throw that out there.
Yeah.
You can address, well, maybe address us on the Facebook group. You can tweet us at GrowWig Report, email us as well, GrowWig Report@GrowWig.net. Let me know what you think. Facebook, whatever form you want to, let me know how should we address the Midnight Express for the GrowWig.net Hall of Fame. But, you know, Frank, we've got a lot of, speaking of listeners, readers, we've got a lot of questions coming in, and I'll let you kick it off.
All right. First question here, turn my light here. First question comes to us from Travis out there. And Travis wanted to know our top five wrestling themes. And, you know, see, when it comes to wrestling themes with you and I, we can't just have it five. That's not going to happen, man. So we have to really go and build into the thought process this morning. And Frank D doesn't usually like to think this early in the morning. But you can go ahead and start with you first, and then I'll go with my list.
Yeah, I can't limit to five either.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had five, and then I thought of something else. I threw it in the mix. So
right.
These are not five, but these are the ones that came to mind when this question was posed to me. Of course, the NWO theme is synonymous with NWO. I mean, when you think of Nitro, you think of that NWO music. So.
Right.
And NWO theme, of course, the glass breaking with Stone Cold Steve Austin. The Hart Foundation music from the 80s. It was also used as Brett's solo career. I always think of that as one of my favorite themes. And, of course, you know, later when Brett came back, I have no idea why, but they changed that theme, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Talking about theme music, boy, that was a blunder there. Midnight Express, there was like three or four different versions of Midnight Express that they used over the years. We've used that as an intro to our podcast as well. I've always loved that theme. No Chance in Hell by Vince McMahon.
Yep.
When I think about the Monday Night War era, that always came to mind as well. No Chance in Hell. And just a couple others I want to throw in the mix here. The Brood, Gangrel, Edge and Christian. What a way to debut with that music and the entrance they'd have. Axe and Smash, Demolition was a great song back in the day.
Yep.
All Together Now, the old WWF Raw music. You know, the pyro going off, you'd hear the song playing in the background. This is Extreme in ECW, the ECW theme song as well. and a couple others. RVD's Walk from Pantera, very synonymous with RVD's run in ECW, and the old Harlem Heat music that Booker T also used in WWE, WWF at the time. Great stuff. And so those are probably my favorites that come to mind.
Right. Well, my favorites that come to mind, I got, of course, NWO, the Rock House music. I got Demolition. I got the Survivor Series 1990 version with the saxophone. I got SummerSlam 1990. NWO Wolfpack, got the Ultimate Warrior. I got Trust Me, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts. I got Voodoo Child for Hollywood Hogan. I got the Corporate Ministry, No Chance in Hell. I got Triple H, My Time. I got The Rock's 1998 theme. He debuted at the SummerSlam. You smell what The Rock is cooking. I got AJ Styles' Evil Ways that he used in TNA. I got The Shield. I got Jive Soul Bro. And I got the Aces and Eights, Dead Man's Hands, lyrical version. So those were kind of mine. Also, Hulk Hogan's American Made from WCW.
As we're kind of brainstorming on this idea, I also liked, back in the 80s, the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat music from the Alan Parsons Project.
Right.
I thought that was good. And I also liked Jeff Jarrett's My World in TNA as well.
Right. And I also liked the Undertaker's Ministry theme song. And I liked the one he came out to at WrestleMania 15. That was a pretty good theme song there.
So basically you're saying, Travis, that we can't limit to five,
we
man.
Can't
There's
limit
so many
five.
Good ones out there.
I like the old Monday Nitro theme song.
Yep.
Back in the day, I like the old Thunder theme song back in the day. WCW Saturday Night, that was a good song.
Oh, the old NWA Crockett shows.
Yeah.
That music, that's every time I hear that like on a commercial, I think of that. That was used in the 80s for the Crockett shows.
Yeah, what about Sunday Night Heat back in the day?
That was pretty good too.
And what was it? Superstars? That one. Remember that one from 1998?
Yep.
Yeah. Superstars. And what else? Hey, you know what? I didn't like the group, but I thought D Generation X had a pretty cool song.
But I would not include Three Count in this group.
No.
I didn't like the group, and I didn't like the music.
Yeah.
But Travis, that's pretty hard, man. A lot of great songs that we were just kind of brainstorming. But I think like in the top five, you got to definitely consider NWO because it was just when I think of wrestling and that period, it was of course the NWO music would play over and over, and that's one of the all time great wrestling themes. Even though it may have came from an adult film somewhere.
I heard that rumor, but I've done some research on that one, and I'm not so sure about that. I actually was on, iTunes, right? So the actual maker of that song is a gentleman named Frank Shelley. He did other songs on this particular album that the song is on. And the song is actually called Rock House, is what it's called. And Rock House is the best song in that whole damn album. So,
well, I'll bet.
Yeah. So... I don't know where they get the whole thing with the, or it sounds like, you know, porno music or whatever. It kind of does, but I don't think it came from an adult movie. I don't think so. I just think that's one of those things that Scott Hall came up with, kind of like when Scott Hall was on Nitro and he said, I don't think that the Harlem Heat are two, you know, guys from Harlem. I think they're two hillbillies from Texas. Which in reality, they were from Texas. So,
right.
You know, just like you say, as long as you grow your dad to the Giant.
And I guess when you say Scott Hall, too, I was thinking the Razor Ramon music was pretty good back in the day as well.
Yeah, way before. I mean, Hall was through it way before he started telling people to blow him, but that's a different story.
And not signing cards.
And not signing people, you know, not signing cards for terminally ill cancer kids, but hey, you know, what are you going to do? We also have, Travis also asked us, our top three dream matches.
Top three, I'm assuming these are matches that never happened.
Right.
I don't believe Hogan versus Bret Hart ever happened.
That never happened.
So I'd have to throw that one in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, Frank, Sting versus Undertaker.
Yeah, that's one, yeah.
I would probably throw out, since I've got three, and these are the three top of my head, and I have to think about it longer for maybe some of the matches I'm not thinking about, but one they never did, obviously, Steve Austin versus Goldberg.
Right. And I also have one myself, Goldberg versus The Undertaker.
Goldberg vs. Undertaker. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. That would have been a good one back in the day.
Yep.
Not anymore. Not in 2014, but nah, back in the day.
Back in the day, it would have been good. Yeah. Another one that comes to mind that I thought maybe they could have done at WCW, Sting versus Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, the old tag team partners there.
Yep.
Yep, that would have been very interesting. NWO versus DX.
That would have been a huge cluster.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that.
Based on the success of the WCW invasion angle, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, because they know how to handle that. I would probably say a match that they could have done that they never did, and I think it probably would have been successful. Eric Bischoff versus Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that's true.
They could have done that when Bischoff first came over to WWF, but they never did. They never went in that direction. So
you know, they could have also done after the whole Bret Hart situation was, remember Owen Hart was off TV for a while, and they brought him back.
Yeah.
Why didn't they do Owen versus Mr. McMahon at that time as well? The pissed off Hart family takes their heat out on Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it's probably so much political stuff going on there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the only ones I can think of right now that actually, you know, would mean anything.
True.
I mean, another match that could happen, you know, it could have been People's Champ versus People's Champion. You know, The Rock versus Diamond Dallas Page.
Did he have another question about WrestleMania? Or was that somebody else that asked about WrestleMania?
That was somebody else. Finishing up Travis's questions here. What are some of the most insightful and surprising moments thus far in our interviews that we've conducted here on the GRP?
As far, you know, we just had D'Lo Brown on this week. D'Lo was talking about that he never thought that Randy Savage will get into the WWE Hall of Fame. All the rumors about, you know, why, what happened, the heat between Vince and Savage. But he believes that Savage will never get in the Hall of Fame. I hope he's wrong, but that was his opinion. And he also brought up that, you know, in his mind, there's nothing PG about wrestling. There's nothing PG about two guys wanting to kick each other's ass.
Right.
So I thought that was a very revealing moment in that interview. And then a Honky Tonk Man came to mind was him talking about Jesse Ventura being jealous of Hulk Hogan's success. I think that was kind of a shoot comment there. And then he also revealed that he owns the Patriot gimmick.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And revealing.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. My take on it, I have to go with something that just really shocked the hell out of me. Not so much, but it just to hear it come out of somebody's mouth was the fact that Ric Flair referred to Teddy Long as, you know, a nigger, the N-word, you know. That really surprised me. You know, I was a fan of WCW growing up. And I didn't realize that that's how Flair felt, you know. But you know what? I'm not a big Flair fan to begin with, so it doesn't really bother me. It just was shocking to actually hear somebody here. It's shocking to basically hear someone say what you already thought in the first place.
Confirmed it.
Confirm it, exactly. So that was a shocking. That was shocking to me. That was insightful to me. I think that Vince Russo saying that he only saw three episodes of ECW was kind of shocking. It's surprising.
Yeah. Get the shovel out.
When surprising to the fact that that's the whole reason why Kurt Angle didn't come to WWF to begin with was because of that crucifixion angle.
And a whole episode of the Monday Night War was devoted to ECW.
Right. Well, it's, you know, what I should say is that's the reason why Kurt Angle didn't sign with ECW was because of that crucifixion angle to begin with. You know, he didn't want to have anything to do with wrestling after that.
But you know, he never heard of that.
Right. So that was insightful. I think another interesting thing was that Brodus Clay saying that John Cena, things are cool like how they are right now. Things are fine. And that it's cool for John Cena to get booed, you know, one place and you know, cheered another. That was very interesting comments there.
Yeah, he said, who's he stale to? And I'm thinking, just about every wrestling fan out there. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would say the other thing that was insightful came from the mouth of Vince Russo, and it's been uttered from other people on you know, previous guests as far as, you know, Frankie Kazarian and D'Lo Brown, is that Dixie Carter didn't really grow in the business. that she really doesn't know anything about the business. She's a nice lady. You know, everybody comes off and says that she's a nice woman. That's fine. That's fine. She probably is a nice woman. I have no problem with Dixie Carter as a human being. I just have a problem with the way you run your company. And that's where it comes out.
You know, over the years, I've had bosses that were nice, but their management style sucked.
Right.
It's nice to be friends with your boss, but on the end of the day, what they're doing is not getting the job done, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, and that's the whole problem with TNA. The dead brand is she didn't grow in the business. That was confirmed by a couple of our guests here on the GRP, and it's pretty much what we've always said. I mean, the reason they're in the boat they're in is because Dixie Carter has retained her position over the years, and she hasn't learned anything over the years, which is unfortunate.
Right. So. Yeah, whatever. Those are my insights and surprises, you know, from our interviews on the GRP. I'm pretty sure with some of the guests that we got lined up in the next couple of months, it's going to be a lot more interesting and insightful.
We got some interesting names coming up, I can tell you that.
Right.
I'm not going to say them to jinx them, because I don't like to do that.
Right.
But some of the names that we're talking to and that have all but confirmed, very shocking names out there, so you'll really enjoy some of the future interviews we have scheduled here on the podcast.
Exactly. Our next question comes here from Ephraim from the Facebook group. He's also the host of the Atomic Podcast, which you listen to that as well on the jorg.net there, as far as the Body Center Podcast as well. You know, we're just full of content here right now on jorg.net. It's very, very good, very good deal. He asks us, Steve, have we seen Lucha Underground and our thoughts on it?
I'll say that I have not seen it, but what I've heard from people that have seen it, they've liked it, and they do think it can be successful.
Yeah, I haven't seen it personally. Until I see it, I'm going to, you know, refrain from saying anything further about it. And
right.
When I do see it, I'll bring it, you know, here on the podcast so you know what I thought about it. His next question is, have we ever seen one of the TNA One Night Only pay-per-views?
No, I have not.
I have seen one. I saw the, believe it was the Joker's Wild Tag Team Tournament pay-per-view, and I thought that it was cool, but the crowd sucked. The crowd made it just, it was garbage, because the crowd made it that way. You know, when you have a situation where you have, you know, really killed the Orlando fan base to the point where those people are just sitting on their hands the entire time you go out there working. It doesn't make for interesting TV. It doesn't make for, you know, anything that I would want to particularly watch. So that was just, it was a garbage show, and that was the only one that I saw, and I never watched them ever again.
You know, the problem I have with these the concept of these pay-per-views, they usually would tape them way in advance.
Right.
You could find out the results. You could find out what happened. You get a recap of the show. To me, if I'm going to pay money for a pay-per-view event, I expect it to be live.
Right.
And I don't want to see pre-taped matches. I mean, that's what you get every week on Impact anyways.
Exactly.
Pre-taped matches. So I didn't like the concept of it. I know it was a reduced price for the shows, but, you know, when I plunk down money for a pay-per-view, I expect to see a premium live event, and you're not getting those one-night-only pay-per-views.
No. Those one-night-only pay-per-views are just another version, another 2 hours of Impact, and another 2 hours of my life that I can't get back, or if it was 3 hours. I don't know, man. All I know is that it sucked. It sucked because the crowd made it suck, but the in-ring action was pretty good. But overall, just, it was garbage. Next question here is going to be from Dakri. Dakri asks, if Brian Pillman hadn't passed away back in 1997, where was the storyline with Goldust going?
Probably in the toilet.
I would have to agree with that. I don't find men wearing dresses to be entertaining. It's the reason why I don't watch any of the Tyler Perry and Madea films. I don't find that to be entertaining at all. That's really lame. And, you know, I don't know. All I know is that Pillman was never right after that accident he had where his ankle got messed up. He was never right after that. I mean, you know, sure, he could have had a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin or something, but other than that, I don't see his career was going nowhere.
Well, maybe if Vinny Rue comes back, we could ask him that.
True.
Yeah.
Second question was Bill Goldberg ever a heel in WCW, and how long did it last? Goldberg turned heel in WCW after Great American Bash in 2000. And he joined Vince Russo and Bischoff in the New Blood. It only lasted a few months because Goldberg, went on, public record saying basically that he was not happy with anything, any type of storyline that Vince Russo had involved in. He is not a fan of Vince Russo at all. So he didn't like it. He liked being a heel. He thought that it further ruined his character, further ruined the brand of WCW.
True. Yeah. I have to agree with that.
Next two questions here come from Ravon. He asks us, do you think Ken Shamrock deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame?
I like Ken Shamrock. I think he could have been more in the business, but he belongs in the UFC Hall of Fame. I don't see him in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Outside of Ken Shamrock being the first person to come up with the whole tapping deal, make you tap, and outside of him holding the Intercontinental Championship a couple of times, what did he do that would make him a Hall of Famer? But, here's the deal. We set the bar, and I hate to keep bringing this up every single time, but we set the bar at a different pace now when you add Coco Beware in here. And I don't believe Coco Beware ever held any tag or any – Coco Beware never held a tag belt, never held the Intercontinental belt the entire time he was in the Federation. But yet he got in.
Yep.
So, on that merit, yes. Shamrock should go.
Okay. I'll buy that. But, again, I just think based on his career, yeah. I like Ken Shamrock a lot. I thought they could have done a lot more with him. And, of course, he was out there, to referee the Bret Hart-Stone Cold match
right.
at WrestleMania. I mean, that's why when I kind of think of him, it's not necessarily in an in-role situation. Of course, he was the NWA first NWA TNA champion. But as far as a wrestling career, I mean, his success was at MMA. So right. I would say he should probably just stick with the UFC Hall of Fame. And I guess he caused some waves there, Frank, when he said he deserves the WWE Hall of Fame. That's a pretty strong statement. I don't know if he deserves it. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem if he would go in, but I just, based on his in-ring performances and matches in his career, I just don't see him as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and he'll learn that Triple H and Vince McMahon decide what you deserve. He ain't got that part yet.
That's true.
Because if you deserve it, you'd be in it.
Yep.
So, last question here is, once again from Ravon. He says, who do you think Brock Lesnar should face at WrestleMania?
Personally, I would book The Rock. I'd like to see Rock versus Brock. That's my own, not a dream match. But if Rock's going to wrestle at WrestleMania, and we've seen Triple H versus The Rock. In fact, you go back and watch the Monday Night Wars, they definitely highlight that. But for me, I'd rather see Brock versus Rock at WrestleMania.
Yeah, Brock versus Rock would be good. That would probably be, yeah. That probably would be the one. I know they're not going to deal with Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. Who knows if Taker's even going to be on the show. But Brock versus Rock would be marquee. Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Brock Lesnar would be marquee.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen, though.
I just don't see it.
Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. I mean, that's what everybody's thinking is going to happen. I hope it's not.
Well, I tell you what, if that's the direction they're going to go, they're going to have to really ramp up Reigns when he comes back. Because right now, I don't think he's in any level to be at WrestleMania main event.
People just don't care about Roman Reigns like that yet.
I'd rather see Dean Ambrose in that spot.
I think Dean Ambrose deserves it. I think. Yeah. I mean, if you think about who can pull it off, it could be an Ambrose or it could be a Seth Rollins. I'm even pushing, quite frankly, for Randy Orton. I mean, give me something new here. Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar would be something new.
That might be the direction they're going with Orton turned a babyface now.
Right.
So.
Although that could be leading the Trips versus Randy Orton.
Probably. That's probably the more likely scenario. And I do think the more likely scenario at WrestleMania. It's probably going to be The Rock versus Triple H. They definitely teased that. But personally, if The Rock doesn't come back and have another match, I'd like to see it against Brock.
Yeah. So, Richard, and that's going to end our listener questions for the week.
Okay. And as we said before, you can tweet us at Gerwick Report. You can follow our Facebook page, which we have daily discussions every day. Sometimes Frank has a topic to kick around. I have a topic to kick around. Some of the listeners or readers of the Facebook page suggest a topic that we debate. And sometimes they get very interesting. In fact, may even have a former WCW wrestler come up and have a couple of comments as well on there. So you never know what you're going to get on that Facebook page out there.
I didn't even know that until I looked at the name. I just thought I was just, you know, debating back with some fan. I didn't even know who the hell it was.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. So, yep. So a lot of ways to interact with us through our Facebook page. As we said, we're on Twitter. You can email us, GerwickReport@Gerwick.net. I'm at Gerwick on Twitter. And Frank, plug your handle.
Yes, real Frank DEE at Twitter. At Twitter.com, and I'm active on there, but I'm more active on Facebook, more so. So if you're a member of our Facebook group, I would suggest you join our Facebook group and you know, be interactive with us on there. Just don't spam us. But I really hate spam, so don't spam us. But you know, if you want to come on there, you want to leave a thread or something like that, that's cool. And I usually respond to pretty much any kind of question that comes my way. So if anybody wants to ask any questions for Frank D, hit me up.
And you should also plug the YouTube channel
as
well.
That's right. Find us on YouTube. It's Gerwick Report Podcast at YouTube.com. We got, you know, several interviews up there. We have the Honky Tonk Man up there, Jacob St. Roberts, Devo Brown, Frankie Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, Sonny Ono, Vince Russo, Teddy Long. We also have some of our clips currently playing right now on TV tracks. So we're all over the place right now, and it's only going to get better. So check us out, Gerwick Report Podcast on YouTube.com. Subscribe to us, and we upload content all the time up there, so stay tuned.
Yeah, so Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, and iTunes.
Right.
So that's a handful, a mouthful right there. So definitely check us out there. And, of course, if you need your wrestling news and need an archive of our podcast as well, always check out www.gerweck.net.